This show is brought to you by BigAndTallMart.com. BigAndTallMart.com is your number one source for all things big and tall. From licensed t-shirts to casual wear and everything in between, BigAndTallMart.com has you covered. Use promo code GEEK10 on checkout to save 10% on orders $50 or more. BigAndTallMart.com is a proud sponsor of ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Did you grow up with the NES, PlayStation, Star Wars, cartoons, and 80s TV? Do you like to think who would win in a fight between Batman and the Master Chief? Comics, games, movies, music, and TV, they're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back, they're gonna save the world of geeks. Games, movies, music, and TV, they're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back, they're gonna save the world of geeks. This Week in Geek. This Week in Geek.
Hey guys, what's going on? You are listening to This Week in Geek, and of course I am your humble host, or not so humble depending how you want to look at it, Mike the Birdman Dodd. Well guys, been a busy week here on Twig. Of course we've got the Nerd News Network, we've had Beyond the Gauntlet happening this week, lots of cool stuff, and well, as I often say when I get a chance to do some of these, I get a chance to talk to a lot of really cool people. As you guys saw, I started a new show called Birdman's Toys yesterday, where I talk about toys. And one of the franchises that has really caught my attention over the last couple of months is the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles franchise. Obviously, there's the new movie coming out in theaters in August, which I hope a lot of you have seen that new trailer, because my God, it finally doesn't look stupid. And of course, there's the awesome Nickelodeon cartoon, which is still going strong and has been renewed for a third season. So, I get a lot of really cool emails, and I get an email from this company called Insight Editions, and they sent me an email about this book called The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Ultimate Visual History. Immediately, this thing grabbed my attention, and I asked, hey, is there any way you could set me up to talk with the author of this book? And luckily they were kind enough to oblige. So I am talking with Andrew Farrago, and he's the curator of the Cartoon Art Museum located in San Francisco. And without any further ado, let's welcome Andrew to the show.
Hi.
Andrew, I gotta say, I had a blast reading this, and I'm not entirely ashamed, or maybe I am. This is one of the first books I've actually read in a really long time, cover to cover, in one sitting. The book actually had me gripped that much, just because you've got so much information about the Turtles franchise in there. And I gotta say, fantastic book. It's something like close to 200 pages, I think. How did you get this gig?
Oh, well, yeah. Thanks for the kind words. And going back to 2012, I had already worked with Insight Editions before. I wrote a book called The Looney Tunes Treasury, and so that put me on their radar. And Chris Prince, who is just like his name, he's a great guy. He's an editor at Insight Editions, and he sent me this mysterious note that just said, you know, we just got a license, and I think you might be interested in this book. And I said, tell me more. And he said, what do you know about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? And I said, you know, a lot, but I'm sure there's a lot more I can learn. And how right I was. I told him I was a Turtles fan from way back, that I would absolutely love the opportunity to pitch something to him. And I basically wrote up an outline. I said, obviously you have to start with Eastman and Laird, the creators of the Turtles. You have to go to Mark Friedman, the licensing guru who approached them and said, I think we've got something here that we can, we can turn this into a big hit. And, you know, and it just sort of went out exponentially from there. If you read the book, then you know that the Turtles just kept getting bigger and bigger, more and more people got involved. And I did my best over the course of about 2 years to track down everybody.
So during the course of writing this book, as you just said, over the last 2 years, you mentioned in the book you had a chance to talk with Eastman and Laird a lot. And these guys were very accommodating and answering all your questions. Now, I have not had the pleasure of meeting either of them at the conventions that they often appear at. What are these guys like in real life?
Oh, they're fun guys. They're actually, if you're a Turtles fan, basically Eastman is like Raphael and Laird is like Donatello. I've not actually met Peter in person yet because he's on the East Coast and any shows and appearances he does. Those tend to be in New England, and I haven't been there since I started working on the book. But Eastman I've met here and there at California conventions over the years. And, you know, Eastman's an incredibly, he's a very generous guy. He's a lot of fun to talk to. I had a blast interviewing him over the phone, and the times that I've met him and hung out with him at conventions. And, you know, he's, like I said, he's Raphael. He's the party guy. And, whereas Peter Laird is, he's about, like, they approached fame differently, actually. Like, Eastman was the young bachelor who, when the Turtles were a big hit, he went a little crazy. And Peter Laird was married. He's about a decade older than Kevin, and he had a much more grounded approach to fortune and fame. And Peter Laird, interestingly enough, just like Donatello, is a bit of an inventor. So he's got a few really interesting patents to his name, including a bagel guillotine. So be on the lookout for that. If you're a Turtles fan and you're a completist, then you'll want this, Peter Laird bagel slicer in your kitchen. But they were, I can't say enough nice things about them. And actually all the other people that I interviewed were the same way. I don't think I heard a negative word about either of those two, over the course of talking to about, I think, more than 60 people that I talked to while writing this book.
So when you write a book about a property as large as that has a 30-year history, like what kind of work goes into that? I mean, like, did you have to go back and read every single issue of the comic, watch every single episode of the cartoon series?
Pretty much. I watched, I tracked down the DVDs. So I watched everything from my introduction to the Turtles, which was the 1987 TV miniseries, all the way through the latest episodes of the Nickelodeon cartoon series, which is phenomenal. I can't say enough good things about that show. And I watched all the stuff in between. So I watched the movies, the three live action movies, the CGI movie. I made it through as much of the Coming Out of Their Shells tour as I could. I could manage.
That's painful.
I watched the next mutation on Netflix. So, no sacrifice was too great.
Now, what was the most difficult piece to get a hold of, like, in all the Turtles media?
Well, it's the cool thing, if you any version of the Turtles that you love, it's all coming back. So the next mutation, that's out on DVD. I don't know if anyone's ever going to you know, untangle the rights and get the Coming Out of Their Shells tour. I don't know if there's demand for that on Blu-ray. So I wouldn't hold my breath on that one. But just about everything else, as far as the media goes, is in print. And the comics, IDW, one of my favorite comics publishers right now, is doing an amazing job in basically going through, you know, year by year and just collecting absolutely everything. So all the Archie comics, they're working on plans to do the, you know, they've pretty much completed the first volume of the original Mirage Turtles. They pretty much got all of that in print, but they're working their way. They're making preparations for volumes 2 through 4. On that, obviously, they're keeping their own IDW comics in print. So it's, you know, it's a great time to be a Turtles fan.
Now, one of the things that I'm a huge fan of, and I presume you are too, is I love the toys done by Playmates, and the guy who got this all ball rolling, I think his name was Mark, pitched this idea, and luckily the right company picked up at the right time, that being Playmates Toys. And we've interviewed the chief turtle officer over there, Carl Aronian, and we've seen just the rich history these toys have had and some of the really neat ideas that have come out of this line. So during the course of your research of this book, did you get a chance to go to Playmates and look at their archive of stuff?
I didn't actually go to their studio or anything, but they did send me, you know, they sent me tons and tons of reference material. I got to do the next best thing and go through, you know, go through their archives. Carl, I had a really extensive interview with him, and one of the really fun things that I uncovered while researching the book was the very first Turtles toy, which Tony Basilicato, who did some work for Mirage Studios, he had some experience actually as a puppeteer. I think more accurately as a Muppeteer. And Mark Friedman of Surge Licensing basically contracted Tony to he said, why don't you make a turtle prototype that I can take to Playmates Toys? So Tony made this giant Turtles toy. Carl said he actually had to drive around California with that in the passenger seat. Got some pretty weird looks for it because, again, nobody really knew the Turtles apart from comic book fans at that point. So it's just, it probably looked like Alf sitting next to this guy driving around L.A. And so Mark took that. He showed it to Playmates. Playmates absolutely loved it. Playmates Toys, it's synonymous with Ninja Turtles right now, but at the time they were really only doing dolls and kids' toys, toys for real young kids. But they saw the potential. Mark Friedman, again, obviously saw the potential because he was staking his whole career on this. And they loved it. He talked them into doing action figures. And like every other kid in 1988, that was the top of my birthday list, Christmas list, et cetera. I've still got my Turtles figures from 88 prominently displayed at my house.
Now, the real question is, do you still have all their original weapons?
I do. I was old enough that I didn't manage to lose them or eat them or anything. And I took the Star Wars figures I have from when I was a kid. Those weapons are long gone. Those accessories just didn't last very long. By the time I was into G.I. Joe, I was very careful to save everything, keep everything in one place. So the turtles are mostly intact.
See, it's always nice to hear people that kind of get the fact that you always should keep their weapons with their figures. I myself have been rebuilding my Turtles collection for the last like year, and I'm realizing just how expensive this is actually getting.
But it adds up after a while.
Oh my god. However, though, here's a little cheap story. This past weekend I went to a garage sale found a near complete Technodrome for $20.
Wow.
Yeah, boy, did I rip somebody off. But it's amazing when you look at all the engineering that went into the Turtles figures, just the fact that these things are, they look this good 25 years plus later. It's really a testament to how well these toys were put together. And also just, I guess, how much the love Playmates had for them as well.
Yeah, they're such, they do such great work. They've hired all the best sculptors. They really spared no expense on those toys. And, you know, I love the current line of toys. They're such a faithful, really great adaptation of what you see on the screen in the current Nickelodeon cartoon. And as somebody who likes toys for playability, I love the fact that those designs are so bottom heavy. You can take those characters and you can stand them up, and you can put them just about anywhere. And those big triangular feet, those are just awesome. You know, you can stand your action figures up. Pose them, play with them, and you know that's the frustrating thing about so many toys I grew up with is you try to stand them up and they just topple over. Especially those G.I. Joes, once you put big backpacks on those guys, you know, forget that.
Well, one of the other things that I think that to kind of continue along with the toys, and I suppose we should probably move on past this, is one of the things that Playmates and Ninja Turtles did right, as I mentioned, their longevity. You look at things like G.I. Joe and He-Man, which have those rubber parts inside them. Those things will eventually fall apart just because rubber rots. Turtles figures?
I've had to replace all of those rubber bands in my G.I. Joes over the years.
Yep, I've replaced more than my share of O-rings. I've broken a few He-Man figures to try and repair those, and they're never the same after that. But with Turtles, you'll never run into that issue.
Yeah, those are great. You know, I've got a kid on the way anytime now, and I'm looking forward to sharing those toys. And you know, almost 30 years after I first got them, you know, they're still in playable condition, which is great.
I mean, to look at the kind of Turtles franchise, it's always been around in some shape or form over the years. And it's had its ups and downs. When you were researching the book, what was the most difficult period to kind of research? Because I myself would argue from Next Mutation till probably about the new 4Kids series. That seemed like a particularly bad time for the Turtles franchise.
Yeah, obviously, when you get as big as they did in the late 80s and early 90s, you know, there's nothing that can sustain that level of excitement that whole time. You know, I mentioned Star Wars earlier, and Star Wars obviously had a lot of peaks through the mid 80s, and then the franchise just sort of you know, it was still popular, it was still around, people still loved it, but obviously you weren't hitting those absolute peaks of insanity that you had during those first three movies, you know, until the new trilogy came along. And the Turtles, yeah, you just can't possibly sustain that indefinitely. And, you know, it was a strange time. It was a big transitional period for Mirage, and one of the great things about doing this book is just meeting all the Turtles fans and talking to them about their experiences and finding out how many people actually stuck with them, you know, through thick and thin. There's some real super fans out there who, you know, it didn't matter if all they had was the Next Mutation or all they had was the Image Comics run in the 1990s, if that was the only thing available, they embraced it and they stuck with it. You know, there were ups and downs. I think they've absolutely been on a rebound in the last several years since the deal with Nickelodeon. And I've got a 5-year-old nephew who is just as crazy about the Turtles as I was when they first came out. when they first hit the mainstream back in 87.
Do you think the Turtles franchise will experience a huge resurgence to more mainstream with this, with the new Michael Bay movie coming out in August?
You know, it's there's such a fan base around the cartoon, and so many diehard fans of the IDW comics. So many people, the success of the book shows that a lot of people still love the Turtles, and you know, continue to be excited about it. So I don't know, with the new trailer that came out, I'm hearing more and more positive buzz about the movie from fans. I think this is the first real extended look we've gotten at the Turtles in action. It's the first look we've had at the Shredder, who just looks so over the top and so so Michael Bay. I think his name's become an adjective, so I can just say such a Michael Bay Shredder that
even his knives have knives by the look of it.
Yeah, yeah, and it's looking pretty fun. It's our first look at Will Arnett as Vernon, and he's one of my absolute favorite comedy actors right now. So I'm, I'd pay $11 just to watch Will Arnett in a bad movie. So there's some Ninja Turtles in it, and I'm definitely there.
Yeah, this is one movie I was really skeptical up until I saw the trailer, and even when they announced Johnny Knoxville and Tony Shalhoub in this, I'm thinking, but this trailer surprisingly does a lot. I mean, you wouldn't know that's Johnny Knoxville as Leonardo unless you were listening for it. And even Tony Shalhoub as Splinter is unrecognizable. And it's a fantastic job of the narration. I'm a little worried about the Shredder, but I will go on record and saying it looks really cool. Even the action figures pretty neat. So thanks, Playmates. So I guess my final question to you, Andrew, is where do you see the Turtles 10 years from now?
Okay. That's a great question. I know from talking to, people at Nickelodeon, including, the incredibly talented Ciro Nielli, who's the executive producer of the cartoon. They do have long-term plans. They want to, they want to keep this cartoon going as long as they can. And I think the fans are really embracing it. And it's hard to imagine any cartoon lasting 13 seasons uninterrupted.
SpongeBob.
Yeah, actually, true. Nickelodeon does have one of the better track records for that. Although there have been periods, sometimes a few years at a time with no new SpongeBob. It's entirely possible that we'll still have this crew working on Turtles cartoons. It's possible that they'll want to tackle some other projects, and then we'll have new creators moving in. But Nickelodeon loves the brand, and the fans obviously do. So I think, I see a really bright future ahead for them.
I really hope you're right, because I really hope this turns into one of those really long-lasting projects and keeps the momentum going, unlike seasons 9 and 10 of the Ninja Turtles cartoon in 87, which kind of ended, frankly, kind of stupidly. But with the new Nickelodeon creative team there, I honestly couldn't have placed this franchise in better hands.
Yeah, one of the really cool things that I discovered in interviewing people for the book, you talk about longtime fans. I talked to Ciro Nielli about his experience as a Turtles fan. And when the very first issue came out, as soon as he heard about it, and this is back in when he's a kid in 1984, he had his mom drive him to the nearest comic shop as soon as he could get there, and said, "I got my $1.50. I absolutely got to get this Ninja Turtle comic book that I heard about." So the people working on the show, the guy who is the head of the show, the executive producer, he bought issue one off the rack, first print, as soon as he possibly could. So just short of being at that actual first comic book convention where it debuted, he was one of the earliest people to read the Ninja Turtles comic book. And so you've got people like that. The people he's got working on the cartoon with him are also longtime fans. So it's in really good hands. I can't imagine people more qualified to be working on this cartoon.
Absolutely. I'm really hoping this cartoon has a long life. I'm hoping the turtles continue long into the future. So whether you're Cowabunga to Booyakasha, I hope it goes on for a very long time. Andrew, thank you for taking time out of your busy day to speak to us here on This Week in Geek. Are there any other projects you're currently working on?
Okay, I'm looking forward to being a father in a couple weeks here. So that's my main project, but my roster is pretty clear right now, so I'm hoping to talk to talking to some editors in the near future and seeing what's coming up next.
Guys, that was my interview with Andrew Farrago, the curator of the Cartoon Art Museum and the author of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Ultimate Visual History. You can pick this book up from Insight Editions. It should cost you around $50. There's a lot of really cool things inside of it. You get a reprint of the actual first issue of the original Eastman and Laird comic. You also get little inserts. There's like parts of scripts in there that actually have a reproduction of the Turtles membership fan club back in like the late 80s, early 90s. Tons of cool stuff, really worth the read. Once you start digging into it, you will not want to put it down. A lot of really cool stuff in there. So go check that out. Highly recommended. So guys, until next time, I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd from ThisWeekInGeek.net saying, live free or die hard. And I'll catch you guys again next time right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Want to see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show. So don't miss it.
What the hell happened to George Lucas?
Oh my God, there's snot on my face. And I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dub, and I'm not a join. Not a join. What the f*** does that mean? F*** that. 10 seconds.
No, you gotta keep that.
Let's do this. Let's do this right the first time.
F*** you guys. Ew, it's in my mouth. Oh, God.
Oh, what's it taste like, Mike?
Water. Ew, salty.
Let's start this episode with shat.
okay, I'm good, Geico.
Holy shit! Oh my gosh! Freak! Die! Holy crap! Whoa! Where did it go?
I'm like a stupid monkey.
As you can imagine, they don't let us out much.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear... somebody random. I don't know. Maybe even a hot chick. Yeah, let's go with that.
Did anyone ever tell you that you were very, very sexy?
How are you? Actually, no.
They never will.
Check out our website, thisweekingeek.net, for more geek content, as well subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Send us a Twitter message by @replying to @ThisWeekInGeek. Lastly, you can email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. This extra music was produced by Prono Bozo at PRONOBOZO.com. We'll see you next time, and remember...
Lower your shields and surrender your listening.